Hey guys, you're listening to Zebras and Unicorns, your podcast about startups, innovation and sustainability. My name is Julia Pabst and today we're going to talk about the EU Commission's new sustainable finance strategy. I will discuss this issue with Professor Henrik Andersen from Copenhagen Business School. He's one of the leading European experts in climate law and in corporate social responsibility. Welcome Henrik and greetings to Copenhagen.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here today.
All right. So let's start with the first question. At the beginning of July, EU Finance Commissioner McGuinness presented the new sustainable finance strategy. What is your impression? Is this really a breakthrough, as the Commission puts it?
Breakthrough might be a very big word, but it's probably part of this process. I mean, financial markets, they react, of course, to information. And that information, what do we really know about those companies, private companies and public companies on the market? What do we know about them? And that's where we will see that the EU is working towards some changes where more information about sustainability must be provided by companies. And that's probably also a result of that we see investors generally having much more focus on green areas than they did 15 years ago.
So there are some changes happening. If you had to put it in a nutshell, what are the key points of the proposal?
That is, first of all, that all public and private companies, they must report back on sustainability. As the currently rules are, it's only companies of a certain size with certain numbers of employees. But that is going to be much wider. More companies, they have to report, make transparent to investors and consumers, what are their plans concerning, for example, climate.
So in future, European companies need to publish reports about how sustainable their business model is. But what kind of information do companies need to include in those reports and how will this affect the market for sustainable investment?
Yeah, I think that's also where we come into one of the big changes. Now, first of all, perhaps I should say that we don't know at this point what the new directive will look like. We can have an idea of it. Currently, it is with the legislative institutions of the EU, and that is the Council and the Parliament, and they're ping-ponging back and forth to find the final solution of that directive. So, but the proposal that they are dealing with at the moment, it is providing much more details to companies. What kind of information is it that they must provide? In the old directive, large undertakings, they had to provide a brief description of the undertaking's business model. That's it. It is very wide. It's not particularly clear for the companies what that would be. So what they will be asked to do now is still large undertakings and as of 1st of January 2026, small and medium-sized undertakings, they must still provide a brief description of the undertaking's business model and strategy, including the resilience of the undertaking's business model and strategy to risks related to sustainability matters, the opportunities for the undertakings related to sustainability matters, the plans of the undertaking to ensure that its business model and strategy are compatible with the transition to a sustainable economy and with the limiting of global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius in line with the Paris Agreement, and how the undertaking's business model and strategy take account of the interests of the undertaking stakeholders and of the impacts of the undertakings on sustainability matters, and finally, how the undertaking strategy has been implemented with regard to sustainability matters. So here we get more information about what kind of information is it that these undertakings, they must provide in order to be more transparent and give that information to the investors so they can make some informed decisions whether to invest or not in the particular undertakings.
So basically, the new legislation pushes companies to make their business model more sustainable since it will be transparent to consumers and investors, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it comes perhaps a bit down to what is it that the investors are looking for. And that's also where it perhaps can be a little bit tricky because we ask these undertakings to provide that information for the sake of investors. However, if we take it into a much wider picture, as you also suggest, businesses, they now have to think about how are they going to implement these specific goals of, for example, the Paris Agreement, although it's not binding on companies, it's binding on states, but they still have to take these matters into consideration when they make their business strategies. So it will be very difficult for companies now not to think climate in their strategies.
In your opinion, will this really affect the sustainability of the financial markets, or is this just a chance for companies to make more money with a pseudo-sustainable image?
I think if we look at it not from the investor side now, but we look at it from the overall plan of the EU, that is to turn much more climate friendly. And that will have to be in all aspects of law and policies. So what is happening here is that they say to companies, you need to think about climate, you need to think about sustainability in your business model. You need to provide the information so it's transparent to everyone. How are you performing? This information will give, of course, for NGOs access to rank businesses. How are they performing in respect of sustainability? But if we take it like the whole big wheel that is turning right now, the urgency to combat climate change, then this is a tiny part of that big wheel. You know, we also hear about consumers, we must change. We shouldn't eat too much red beef, for example. It can be difficult for some, perhaps. My family members, the older ones, they think it sounds completely out of there. I mean, if they want to have a beef, they're going to have the beef. So it will take a long time to turn that big wheel into a state where we are all more sustainable. So for companies to become more sustainable, is it a matter of money? You could probably say, yes, it is. What is it the investors are looking for? They will look for what is the profit they can gain. But then, on the other hand, we've seen in the US with the Trump administration when he pulled out of the Paris Agreement, we saw that for some companies there, they decided to still comply with some tough climate goals. And we also saw some of the investors buying into companies, not necessarily for profit, but because of the interest of climate. So we see some groups are forming also with the aim of promoting the climate, that they will buy into companies in order to have something to say in these companies. So I think to a large degree, it's a matter of profit, but not only. I think we'll see some investors with some ideological aims of being involved in this.
So sustainability plays a more and more important role for investors. However, they can only form their opinion based on the reports that companies publish. What happens if companies greenwash their reports? What are the legal consequences?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're not allowed to do that. That comes into the national systems, really, because what we also have to keep in mind here, it's a directive. And a directive is supposed to go to the member states, and then it's up to the member states to implement these directives into national law. But the question is, how well a job do the member states do when they implement these directives into national law? And until then, the directive will not bind the companies directly. They're not under an obligation to comply with the directive. They're under an obligation to comply with the national law that is implementing the directive.
So in short, the national legislation will vary from member state to member state, and companies will need to adapt to these national legislations that are based on the European framework. Okay, so let's come to the next issue. Shortly before the new sustainable finance strategy, the Commission also published its long-awaited proposal for the ecological part of the EU taxonomy. How are consumers affected by the EU taxonomy? What does it mean for them?
Well, I think this is also part of this bigger wheel. Sustainability and ecology is really part of the same frame, really, that we are trying somehow to take out of the system sort of the poison that can be in the system in respect of climate, but also in respect of what is it that we consume. When I go to the supermarket today, there are much more options available for me when we talk about ecological products, for example. Much more than we saw before. And of course, I have this idea that when a product says it's ecological, it will meet certain criteria compared to the product that isn't. And we see this increasing market for that, which is also affecting the prices actually of the market. So today, I think you'll see that ecological products will be the same price as non-ecological products. But it is just part of this sort of greener approach that the EU wants to take to sort of make us healthier, perhaps, in respect of nature and also in respect of what is it we eat.
So basically, the EU taxonomy affects all kind of different aspects in life.
Yeah, because they turn the big wheel that I mentioned before, and there's so many aspects of it that's part of that of that big wheel that they're turning at the moment. So you want to have a sustainable, healthy environment where we have information about what is it that I as an investor put money into, or what I as a consumer, what do I buy in the supermarket? And there are some expectations that if there's a certain label on a product, that it of course comply with that label. The legal part, it's always a difficult one. The moment we go in and we legislate, then we take that voluntary dimension away. And that means that we could say before, if I bought a product from a company, on its website, it outlines certain specific corporate social responsibilities on the website. I buy a product. And I have this expectation that this company, let's say I'm buying clothes, for example, and I have this expectation that this company is writing in its corporate social responsibility that the workers in country where they produce these t-shirts, that they live under very healthy conditions and that they have reasonable wages. Now, what if I, as a consumer, I find out that that's not the situation? Now, can I use that information saying, okay, this company does not comply with its corporate social responsibility. Can I use that to say I will not be bound by the contract, the purchase I made of this t-shirt? That can probably be very difficult. So the moment we start to legislate on these matters, then of course it will also be easier to take a company that does not comply with what it posts of information on its website, it will be easier to take them to a court. That can both be for a consumer, but of course also for the authorities to do so, because now they are bound by a law saying they must give this information. And of course, we will assume that that information, it is correct. And if it isn't, we can take them to court. That can be good, and it can be bad. The good side is that, yes, we have this legal instrument. The downside of it is, of course, what if it doesn't work? What if some companies, they might be bound by something that would be very difficult for them to comply with? And that is where, if we just go back to that directive, non-financial reporting and sustainability, the changes that is coming to it, is because something didn't work well in the first one and there was too much legal uncertainty. Now the question is, with the new one that will come, although it's clearer, the question is still, will there be some companies that are caught somewhere where they're uncertain on what is the information they have to provide?
Some aspects of the EU taxonomy are still to be discussed. What are your expectations for the future developments? How strict is the final legislation really going to be, and what will it mean for companies?
Stricter than before. And one of the things, of course, which is tricky in all this, that is that the moment that the EU imposes all these requirements on EU businesses, now, how will that affect their competitive level compared to businesses from outside of the EU? Then, of course, the EU needs to work on a model where it's also looking at that competition that EU companies they are in, because we don't want to be in a situation either where we will see that companies would say, oh, it's too strict in the EU. We move our production abroad to places where the requirements are much more lenient. And that's where there's also some work that needs to be done in the EU on how to handle that. In respect of climate change, you talk about what's called carbon leakage. And that is that the companies, they stop producing a particular product in the EU and instead they buy it from outside. But the emission, the CO2 emission, will still be very high in those countries. So even though we don't do it in the EU, they do it in those other countries. And on overall, we haven't done much for the climate on a global scale. We have just moved the problem to somewhere else where they don't have the same strict rules. So it's about to find this balance between all these various stakeholders that we have. I mean, from consumers, investors, the companies, and of course, the climate, the ocean, animals, and so on.
You were already talking about the topic of competitiveness. I'd also like to address that, because the EU plans a form of carbon custom on goods from outside the common market. In terms of international trade, is the EU really allowed to introduce a carbon tax like that?
But then we now move into a different set of rules that the EU must comply with, and that's the law of the World Trade Organization. Is it possible to impose taxes on products from outside of the EU? And in my view, it is possible to do so. And that would probably also be what they're going to do, impose specific kind of duty or something like that. The challenge we face is that if we talk about products coming from, let's say, a least developed country, they might not have the facilities nor the resources to provide that information that we're looking for. So the problem with that is that if that will sort of block for the import from least developed countries, then there will be this effect in these countries that workers will lose their jobs and they will not have the same access to social benefits as you will see in the EU member states. So that can create a complete different set of problems, economic problems in these countries. So I think it's very much a matter of dialogue. It's a matter of different kind of support, in particular for least developed countries, so they will not lose this game if the EU will impose taxes for the sake of the climate. But we need to keep that other aspect in mind as well. So it's this huge jigsaw puzzle that somehow needs to be solved here.
So this appears to be a topic that the EU institutions definitely still need to work on. Let's come to my last question. The Commission's proposal is still a proposal, so the European Parliament and the Council still need to agree on it. What is your prediction? Will the final legislation lose some of its edges?
I would be very surprised if there would be too many obstacles, at least in respect of the aim of getting companies, and not only large companies, but also small and medium-sized enterprises, to provide information that concern the climate. So I think it's something that will go through. I expect it. I would be hugely disappointed if it weren't to go through. But I can see, of course, that there might be challenges sometimes for smaller companies. Now they have to be clearer on information that they're going to provide, which of course can be an extra burden for them. And there might in that respect, of course, be some opposition to it. But if we take the other view, and I'm not talking about investors' view here, but I'm talking about the view of climate and the urgency to handle climate changes, then of course it is necessary that we in all areas, that all of us, we come together and we contribute to it. And that means also enterprises, both small and medium-sized, as well as large ones, they must do it so we can have that information that's necessary, not only for investors, but for all of us, so we can make those informed choices, whether to buy a product, whether to invest in the company, in light of their climate actions.
To put it in a nutshell, climate legislation is a huge and very complex topic with many stakeholders that need to be taken into account. Thank you to Professor Henrik Andersen from Copenhagen Business School for breaking this topic down for us. Warm greetings from Vienna to Copenhagen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's it for today. Thank you for listening and don't forget to tune in for our next episode of Zebras and Unicorns. Have a great time. Goodbye.